Hello, it's Vanessa Garrity here from Beyond the Room, and I'm here at the Improving Patient Safety event in Leeds, which, if you're following it on Twitter, it is hashtag IMPSAF2019. And I'm here with Natasha, who is a sociologist working at Bradford Teaching Hospital. Do you just want to introduce yourself, Natasha?
Yeah, I'm Natasha Hardiker. I'm a researcher. I work for the Yorkshire Quality and Safety Research Group, which is part of Bradford Teaching Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust.
Brilliant, thank you. And Natasha's been part of a team this morning who's been running a really interesting workshop on technology for patient safety. And what I loved about the workshop was the way that you broke things down into quite a simplistic way. And it really gave the message that anybody can get involved in innovation and anyone can make changes. So for people who are listening online, Natasha, could you just give us a flavour of what you've been talking about this morning?
Yeah, so we were talking about sort of the pathway, the journey to innovation, and we talked about understanding the problem and identifying problems and unmet needs. And then we talked about the ways in which you might think about generating solutions to those, and then also where you might go for support in order to help fund those or get support in that whole process. So the key points from identifying problems but also in solutions is to really understand the context within which you are developing a solution to a known problem. And that's really to avoid coming up with something that isn't needed.
Yeah.
or can't be used. And so really to do that, we need to make sure that we are involving people from the very first stage, not only in terms of the generating solutions but also in understanding the problems.
Yeah.
And so we can do that through observational work, so having a look, seeing what people are already doing, what they're already using, but also through things like focus groups, and making sure that we're including as broad a number of people in that as possible.
Yeah, it was really interesting. You gave an example of, for example, a blood pressure monitoring machine that some of the people that you might involve wouldn't necessarily be the people that you would think of. So obvious, an obvious person would be the patient, another obvious person might be the clinician. But can you say a little bit more about kind of who else you might involve?
Yeah, so thinking about who is the user of something like a blood pressure monitor, we also need to include people who are going to come across that device on a day-to-day basis. Mm. And that might be people like the people who are cleaning it, but we also need to think about who's going to buy it, who's going to maintain it, so people like from like medical physics, clinical physics, and then also the different contexts in which that machine might be used. So it could be used in a hospital and then hospital staff engage with it, but it could also be used at home, and so people who work in the community may also need to interact with the machine. So it's really about thinking who could come into contact with and making sure that you involve as many of those people as possible in the development or evaluation of that device.
And you talked a little bit about iteration. Could you explain what that is to people and why that's important?
Yeah, so iteration is really recognising that processes are often not linear. So it's not sort of identifying the problem, coming up with the solution, as if it's they're totally different things, but that most of the time those things overlap. And so observational work, talking to people and evaluation as something that happens throughout the whole process and journey, and not just in linear stages. And sometimes that can be a source of frustration for some people. So if you recognise that that's the case from the very beginning and also build it into your project plan. So things like Gantt charts are often used in order to plan projects and show discrete activities, but realistically, knowing that activities are going to be used again and again, so observation is going to be useful at the beginning, the middle and the end, can just help you plan that project more effectively.
Yeah, it seems much more holistic and less reductionist in terms of thinking about the complexity of humans and all the factors that might affect how somebody behaves, thinks, feels, sociological influences, and so on and so forth. And I know that it's used a lot in digital design, isn't it, which we're also talking about this morning. Another thing that I picked up on that you talked about was the difference between sort of step change innovation and disruptive innovation. Could you say a bit more about that for people?
Yeah, so step change is about using what's already there and maybe making slight improvements. So one of the examples that we gave was a wired mouse to a wireless mouse. They both fulfil the same function. You don't need an awful lot of training to be able to use them because it's effectively the same product. But it has the additional benefit of being much more mobile, and also that you don't need as many wires on your desk. So there's a change that confers some improvement and benefit, but it's not remarkably dissimilar from what already exists.
Yeah.
Whereas disruptive innovation is something that disrupts the existing way of doing it, and or will need more infrastructure to support it. And the example that we gave was, you know, the old analog wired phones to something like smartphones, which in terms of functionality do an awful lot more than just being a phone, but also require a huge amount of investment, not only in the technology itself but in the infrastructure around that technology, so things like Bluetooth technology, wireless technology, and then also in terms of learning. You know, it's relatively easy to use one of the old analog phones. It can be quite difficult for people to learn to really get the full functionality out of a smartphone.
Definitely.
But it's massively beneficial because it's really revolutionised the ways in which people work and conduct their personal life. So disruptive technology can often require an awful lot of investment, but the benefits can be huge.
Yeah, definitely. So another thing that you talked about today, which I picked up on really, was about thinking outside the box, and some of the kind of possible approaches. So you talked about reverse brainstorming, you talked about things like learning that from other industries, so for example, aviation, some of the processes and theoretical models that we can use, like De Bono's six thinking hats. So just for people who are listening online, could you just give us a quick summary of some of those themes?
Yeah, so thinking outside the box is really to try and step out of doing things the way that we've always done them. And sometimes this can be really difficult when we're so used to doing something in a certain way. But it's thinking about what needs to be done and also how it needs to do it. And one way that you can do that is to think about benefits rather than features. So what does something need to achieve rather than what does something need to do? But also thinking about what you want to achieve and starting from there and working backwards rather than starting from the beginning and working towards what you want to achieve and building it up, sort of starting from where you want to already get to. Using other creative methods such as drawing and sketching can be really useful, especially when that's done in groups. Learning from other industries that may already have made massive gains in making similar kind of improvements, even if the context is different. And for me, what's really important is not just looking at what it is that you're doing, but how you're doing it. So the example that I gave was of an ATM machine. The goal for people using an ATM machine is to get money out, but they also need to retrieve their card from the machine. And the order in which those things happen is really important, because what they found was if they give people the money first, once that goal has been achieved, they likely don't attend to the fact that they haven't got their card, and so they walk off without their card. Whereas just simply reversing those two tasks made it much more likely that people are going to achieve the goal that they wanted to achieve, which is to get their money, but that they're also going to have their card.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to understand what are all of the goals that are trying to be achieved and how is best to achieve them, rather than just what is it that we're going to do.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And there was a real applied example in the workshop today, which was around the work that you've been doing in Bradford, which was an NG feed testing approach, wasn't it? Could you just say a few words about that for people who are listening online?
Yeah, so nasogastric tubes are used, they go into a patient's nostril and down into the stomach to provide feeds when people can't swallow, for example. Sometimes those tubes are not placed in the right place, and harm can occur if you put food, say for example, into the lung. So we were looking at ways in which to avoid that happening. Some work's already been done to look at why the guidelines that are currently exist are not being adhered to, and that behaviour change work was successful in improving adherence to existing guidelines. But what we wanted to do was look at ways in which we could change existing practice so that compliance on guidelines wasn't necessarily the key factor. And we drew from another industry, so the agri-food industry, and utilised a technology that's already being used there and then applying it to this situation. We did a lot of market research to look at what was already out there and what our device needed to do, but also what it needed to not do. We've done focus groups with users, and we're also in the middle of a big user centered design process in which we're doing observational work in hospitals and also in the community to understand how nasogastric tubes are already being used and the processes of putting NG tubes in and also testing their position, so that when we develop the device, we know it works within existing practices. Because if it doesn't do that, then we can create a device that really works and is very effective, but if it can't be used in the real world, then no one will buy it. So we're drawing on that various users to help us develop that device, and we've got funding from the Medical Research Council to do that, and are also working with Medipex, who are innovation hub for Yorkshire and Humber, and drawing on their expertise. So it's a collaboration between a number of different organisations. And I would say that's a really key thing about innovation, is that it's never a solo project, unless you're talking about sort of small service changes, that it requires collaboration between people, and also often support, and that support can be available from lots of different places, and we can link to places to go to for support depending on where you are in the country.
That's great. And for people who are listening online and wanted to know more about what you've been talking about today and also the innovation in Bradford, where would you suggest that they look, or who would they contact?
So I would suggest that they look at the website, so looking at Yorkshire Quality and Safety Research website, that can be found through going to the Bradford Hospital's website or through Bradford Institute for Health Research. They can look on Twitter, and we can also they can look at Medipex, or they can contact myself via email, which is natasha.hardiker@bthft.nhs.uk.
Thank you, that's brilliant.